And hello again, everybody, and welcome to Birdies and Beer. This is the unique lifestyle podcast featuring all things golf and craft beer. Recording live from the Business Radio X studio outside Atlanta, here is Tim Stoltz.
Welcome, everybody. Appreciate you being here for another episode of Birdies and Beer. We are talking golf and beer, but we are heavy, heavy golf today. Our beer guest fell through, so we are rolling with a lot of golf, and there's a lot to talk about. I am joined in studio by my Birdies and Beer partner, Jason Grady.
Hello, hi there. Jason.
We are joined by Rich Alvarez of the First Tee of Atlanta.
How you doing, guys?
Great. Thanks for being here, Rich. And Robbie Morris of Southern Simulators.
Good to see everybody.
Great to see you, Robbie. Thanks. I wanted to kick things off. It was a fun, fun weekend over in Scotland talking about the Open Championship. You can't be a golf fan and not be excited about what happened over there at Carnoustie. So I took some notes, and then we'll throw it out for discussion. I thought it was fantastic. It was very entertaining. I thought we have a deserving winner. Molinari did not make a bogey on the weekend, which is remarkable. And it was just very highly entertaining. Every time they showed somebody putting, it felt like they said, this is for the lead or a share of the lead.
I think at one point there were six guys tied for the lead at six under, weren't
they? Yes.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic. It was fun to see Tiger in the mix, but he faltered again late, which is becoming a little bit of a habit. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems to be a theme that he keeps being in the mix right there, looking like he's the old Tiger, and then all of a sudden a double or two happens and he looks human again.
Now, is it poor selection or poor execution or some of both?
I think both he and Spieth can be blamed for a little bit of poor decision making. I did not like his choice of that flop shot after he hit it out of the. Was he in the rough or a bunker? I can't remember.
It went off the guy.
After he hit the guy, correct.
Two guys, I think.
Which you know, right. Ours would have been a 60-yard shot over two bunkers and some berm.
Right.
He should have just played to make his bogey and hoped to make a par putt, and then Spieth. And Robbie, we'll talk to Robbie a lot later about this. Robbie was an aspiring professional golfer. Why is Spieth hitting that wood out of the rough, downhill lie on that par five?
Yeah, you mean the three wood that he tried to hit on that par five?
The gorse,
he hit it way right. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just these guys know that their short games are super strong. So if he can advance it into a really quality spot up there shorter and closer to the green, he's got a better chance because it's Jordan Spieth.
Did he overestimate?
I don't like the decision at all. I mean, you saw, I forget his playing competitor or partner, hit an iron. It was Xander Schauffele.
Yes.
Hit an iron right down the middle and keep himself in play, in contention, and the whole thing.
It was pretty obvious that the winning score was going to be about a 7 or an 8 under, and I don't think he needed to press there.
No, he was at 9 at that point. He was still even par for the day.
Yeah. Going back to Tiger and that shot there, I think mentally is where he still is not right. And obviously he's making those decisions. That decision, that flop shot, he thought he was the old Tiger and something miraculous was gonna happen. And the old Tiger Woods would never play for a bogey.
Sure.
So I think mentally that's where he needs to get to.
He needs to act like he's not quite as good anymore, right?
He needs to act like he's human, basically, is what it is.
The impressive part is how Molinari handled playing with Tiger on a major championship Sunday like that, not making a bogey, just looking steady all day, no emotions, just rock solid.
I mean, steady as a rock. Yeah. Made his last bogey on Friday. I don't remember which hole, but, I mean, come on.
That's unbelievable.
It's good playing. Yeah, unbelievable.
I don't think it should be that surprising to anyone if you've been watching for the last 3 or 4 weeks. He has been on fire.
Yep.
His putter has been incredible. And he is such a steady player. He doesn't do the theatrics out there.
Right.
He just plays golf. And if your putter's on fire, that's what's going to make you successful.
No doubt. He won in D.C., at the Quicken Loans, he won over in Europe at the BMW PGA. Finished second at John Deere. I mean, he's
and I was hip to that. I put a $20 bill down for Molinari on Wednesday to win the tournament, and it was a pretty hefty payout. So I had a great Sunday watching. Well,
congratulations! I also had him at 28-1.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, I think a lot of people were betting on Frank that day.
Excellent.
Yeah.
There's going to be some more gambling talk in a little bit, too. Thank you, Robbie, for mentioning Xander Schauffele. How about him playing Twister in the bunkers on the front nine? I mean, he was in any conceivable leg position you can imagine.
Almost a contortionist.
He had that left knee tucked up under there against that wall, and still a quality shot for the situation.
Yes.
Yeah. One of those times, I was looking at it going, he's going to hurt himself, and it's not going to be a good hurt. It's it's going to be a nasty injury.
Yes.
And at least if I would have been in that position, I would have been. My knee would have exploded. But it's incredible what he was doing.
Rich, we've played golf together. You would have taken a drop.
I know you're right, and not counted it. Is that what you're saying,
Rich? Go ahead and drop it out of there.
That's
no problem.
Right.
Thought it was really fun that for 5 hours of broadcasting on Sunday, we didn't see or hear anything of Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy, and then within the last half hour, boom, they're in the lead in the clubhouse. It was crazy.
Yeah, they went out and put down some low numbers early. I mean, even on Saturday, too. I mean, you're looking at 7-unders on moving day for Justin Rose right out of the gate.
He's so solid.
So solid. He's a machine is what he is.
It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Been playing great. I got tired of seeing Justin Thomas. And I realized he wasn't even playing.
Yeah, right.
I mean, every second commercial was Justin Thomas.
Yeah, they didn't plan for that miscut there.
No, I can't believe the sponsors are
him or Dustin Johnson for sure.
That's for sure. Yes. Matt Kuchar with a quiet top 10.
Once again.
Isn't that his game, though?
Yeah,
isn't that the name of his game? He's just always around, steady, not flashy, just gets it done, a few under each day, and next thing you know, he's got a chance.
I mentioned it. I was watching with my son, 16-year-old, who's a first-tee participant, throw that in there. And I just said, you know, Kuchar's just playing for a top 10 right now. He goes out there and he's like, all right, I'm going to make a little money. If something goes right, I'll win.
Right.
But if somebody else goes wrong. But otherwise, I'm just going to just keep plugging along. I mean, he's incredible like that.
Solid. Steady, for sure.
I just wish he could close one of them out.
Yeah. He deserves a major.
He really does.
Yeah, I would definitely like to see him
well-respected on tour. And
yeah.
Like to play
he's a workings
ping-pong.
Man, too. He's not the gift of the earth, right? He's put in his time.
Right. Kind of like a Wisconsin guy like myself. A Stricker is the same way.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And both have had their chances. They've
You're
I mean,
absolutely
you could say
right.
Both have blown majors.
But last year, yeah, for Cooch. I mean, he was right there.
Yep. Same tournament, right?
Yeah.
He was playing against Jordan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Last note I have here about the Open is Tony Finau getting closer. He has played in 5 majors in the last 2 years. Here are his results. He was tied for 27. At last year's Open, tied for 44 at last year's PGA, tied for 10th at this year's Masters, 5th at the U.S. Open, and tied for 9th at the Open this past weekend. And he is a juicy 50-1 to win the PGA Championship.
Those are some good numbers.
I'm
going to
put a little bit on
that. Yeah, let's do it together. Let's take a little chunk on him.
That's right. You talk about the flip side here. That is a completely gifted player incredibly gifted player. Am I wrong? Was he not on Big Break over here at Lake?
I'm not even sure.
I think he was on Big Break several years ago.
That's amazing.
Is that something you can look up, Jason?
at Reynolds Plantation.
You could be right.
I don't have enough knowledge to argue with you.
I watched a lot of those seasons and episodes,
on,
but I didn't catch Finau in those. But I wouldn't put it past him. He seems like a journeyman like that. And you know, it's amazing to see if somebody's on that type of TV show to get to a top 10 in a major in consecutive fashion. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a testament to this game on how, you know, you put in what you get out of it, you know. And the harder you work, the further you can go, and the sky's the limit at times.
And it is a fine line between really, really good players and good players.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a putt or two around.
Yep. Did they discontinue the Big Break? Do they not do that anymore?
You know, I don't know. It should have kept going because the entertainment factor was high.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I had a collegiate buddy of mine go on one, Brandon Hartzell, and he was the antagonist, really. he had a lot of lip and talked a lot of trash and got out kind of early, which I think the majority of people watching were laughing and pulling for overall. But it's a really cool show, and it just showcases that there's so many levels of the sport, at the professional, the amateur, any of it. And whether you're just a regular, everyday golfer and just love it because you love being outside, or you want to really work hard and put in the effort, anybody can do it. You can see that it's not the typical athlete all the time. It's not 6'6", 245, bigger, faster, stronger all the time. You got Molinari, you got Spieth, and that's why I like this sport a lot.
You hear that, Mike? Anybody can do it. Anybody.
Not anybody. You haven't seen me try to swing a golf club. But it's nice to know.
And to confirm, he was he did finish second at the big break in 2009.
Nice. Bingo,
look right at you, Rich.
Nice call, Rich.
Sorry, man. You know, I'm watching too much TV, I guess.
Golf Channel. Extra beer
it's,
for that
it's
one.
It's at least there the Golf Channel.
Golf
yes.
Channel.
So, anything else on the Open? Anybody?
No, but what are the what are you thinking for? Are we talking about the PGA yet or no?
We can talk about the PGA. You bet.
So, what are you thinking? You think Tiger's primed and ready? What do you think? Robbie, you're shaking your head over.
Well, I mean, I got mixed emotions, right? I love seeing Tiger in the mix, but I also not sure if I'm really ready for him to win another big thing right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like his comeback. It's made me more of a fan mm-hmm. now seeing that he's, again, more of a human than not just the elitist out in front of everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm more of a long shot guy who's playing hot going in kind of chooser. So.
Okay. I agree with you there. I have said for the last 4 or 5 months that if and when Tiger does win, watch out.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, that confidence level will
over.
Be back.
Just it's him over. Being in the mix, the yeah, ratings were up huge numbers.
Absolutely. Well, there's no question that he being in the mix at the Open made those other players a little bit wary. I mean, I think Jordan actually spoke on that.
Yes.
He looked
yes.
at the scoreboard and said, oh, man. He looked over at Geller and of course, his caddy had to calm him down a little bit. Like, look, you've been here so many times. You can do this.
I had the privilege of watching the final round with Jason Grady.
Oh,
and we both kind of said we would love to see a Woods-Spieth four-hole playoff. That's kind of what we were rooting for.
I was hoping for a six-person playoff. Well, so how would they, how do they do that? Do they send them all at once, or do they do three and three? And
from what I've experienced, you're going to send everybody all at once.
It's like a member and guest then, shootout. Everybody's
yeah,
in.
Yeah,
everybody's
the shootout
in
for sure at a local club.
Awesome.
And currently, they have Tiger just behind Rory, Dustin, and Jordan, all at 12 to 1, and he's at 16 to 1. So he's right in the mix.
12 to 1 are the favorites.
Correct. All three of them.
So it's wide open.
It is wide open.
Yeah, there's a whole.
Well,
mix
I'm
of
sticking
them.
With my boy Tony Fina.
Yeah,
Robbie
I'm
and
with
I
you on that. Fina. I'm with you on that one.
Got to look down the list a little bit on that one.
Yeah. Which is what we want.
Good odds, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw this out. I'm going with Kuchar.
Okay. How can you not? So steady.
There you go.
You got any odds on him, Jason?
I need to get the app live for Birdies and Beer so we can play some actual odds bets on this.
There you go.
Sorry, who are we looking
Kuchar.
For here?
Matt Kuchar.
You heard it here first. You got Kuchar on the call for
That's
the
right,
PGA
man.
With Rich.
That's right.
No, he's over 60 to 1.
Then
really?
Go.
Well, that's even better.
I apologize. 50 to 1, same as Tony Finau. There you go.
Well, those are our horses for that tournament.
And that's it. Boys. We're rooting big for them. The Open was not the only professional golf tournament. The PGA Tour had an event in Nicholasville, Kentucky, called the Barbasol Championship. They had all kinds of horrible weather and ended up with a Monday finish. But two things of note. Brittany Lincecum played, shot 78-71. I believe she's the fifth female. Is that right, Robbie, you think?
Somewhere in that range,
fifth,
for sure.
Fifth woman to ever play in a PGA Tour event. Still none have made the cut. She did have a nice second round, including an eagle on 17. And she had nothing but good things to say. And everything I've heard and read from the other players and tournament officials had nothing but good things to say about Brittany as well. So it's kind of cool. Back to your point, Robbie, that there are so many different levels and anybody, it could be anybody, there should be some more women playing.
Absolutely.
At least
I mean,
given an opportunity to do that.
This sport is not gender specific. Brittany Lincecum hits the ball a long way. And so she's tailored for that kind of event. And I didn't watch much of it, but I did see that Michelle Wee was one of the five that has played. But
right.
She's played in 6 to 8 events.
Right,
yeah,
right.
And missed every single cut.
Yeah,
and
right.
I mean, certainly it's a tough thing to do, but give them more chances. I bet you eventually some of them make, you know, get in that cut line and play on the weekend and add excitement.
It'd be fun. It would be fun to see a woman playing on Sunday
mm-hmm.
In a PGA Tour event. So there was the second thing that caught my attention, and I have to tell a little backstory here. So a week ago, I moved my daughter from Athens. She's finishing up her college career, and fortunately for Tim, She's living at home this last semester. But as we were moving late Saturday night, her roommate came home and tried to talk my daughter Abby into going out, which then inclined Abby to try to talk her dad into going out. And my excuse was I didn't have any clothes. I brought moving clothes. That's all I've got. And her roommate said, well, I have a golf shirt. I have a men's medium golf shirt that I've never worn. And she brought it out. It was a nice-looking shirt. And I said, why do you have a men's medium golf shirt? She said, well, my cousin gives them to me and my family all the time. He's on the PGA Tour. I said, oh, well, what's his name? And she said, JT Poston.
Mm, yeah.
Yep, absolutely heard of him.
Okay. I had not.
And why haven't we met?
That was my next question. Yeah. Well, I then looked up JT. JT is the real deal. And JT just went 69, 66, 66, 66 up there in Nicholasville, Kentucky to finish fifth.
Ooh.
He is now 100 on the FedEx and the FedEx Cup points. 25-year-old from Hickory, North Carolina. He has made 34 of 47 cuts that he's been in his career, and he's got three top tens already this year. JT Poston is now the official PGA Tour member of Birdies and Beer. And we are going to be following this guy, and we're hoping to get him on the show at some point.
Right.
And at this point now, if he gets in the playoffs,
bring him on.
Pulling hard for him to make it to Atlanta.
Sure.
To the Tour Championship. So JT Poston.
All right.
That's our guy.
We'll be following him for the rest of the season.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And what a start to his career. I mean, making that many cuts in that event right out of the gate.
Yes.
I mean, there's a good possibility he's going to be something serious.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Probably let's drink a little beer, huh?
I would think so. He's 25.
Most golfers, I feel like, are generally more beer drinkers than not.
Yeah, right.
I think overall.
Rightfully so.
Kind of goes hand in hand with the sport.
Does the PGA Tour have rules against drinking during a tournament?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay, yeah, sure. I'm pretty sure John Daly used to break all of those
rules. I was
going
to say, yeah. I'm pretty sure he used to do
he
it,
would,
though.
He would come
bottles.
In.
He had different bottles.
He would either airplane bottle it, or I kind of read a story. I remember that he would come in, and at the turn, he came in and slammed about four beers, went out there and shot like four or five under on the back, and I felt like maybe he had that as a crutch to his career during that time.
Right.
But it's absolutely banned. Most of the substances, especially during the event, not allowed.
Good to know. If I ever make it on tour, I know I can't drink during the event. So. All right, Mike, let's move ahead to our birdies segment. We are so happy to be joined today by Rich Alvarez, the Director of Strategic Partnerships.
Right. And development.
And development for the First Tee of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Rich, dive right in. Tell us what's been happening with the First Tee and what kind of things are you working on?
Yeah. Well, thanks again for having me today. And I appreciate you giving us the forum to kind of speak about the First Tee and kind of show what we've been doing and how we've been impacting kids throughout Metro Atlanta. Let me give you a really quick background on myself first. If you can. I've been in Atlanta since 92. I'm originally from Gary, Indiana, up there near south of
Gary,
Chicago.
Indiana,
there
Gary,
you go.
Indiana.
Music man. So I came to Atlanta and owned a company called Atlanta Club Sport. And so we used to run sports leagues throughout Metro Atlanta. Sold that company about 5 years ago and kind of took a sabbatical. And about a year ago, actually, I was during that sabbatical. I became a caddy at Eastlake, by the way. So which is cool because you know you get playing privileges over there. So that was good.
I hear that course is all right.
It's decent. And then this opportunity came up with the First Tee. This is like my second life, my second career, and it was something that I wanted to do. To impact kids throughout the community. I love golf. My son was part of the program. He's been a part of the program for 7 years now, I think. So that came up, and I started actually about almost exactly 1 year ago. So I've been there for a year. One of the things that I wanted to bring to the table was to impact more kids. And so that's been my kind of driving force since I came on. So in 2017, we impacted approximately 120,000 kids in the metro area. And we do that three different ways with the First Tee. We do it with our Green Grass program, which is our life skills education program, the one that you see on TV and everybody kind of is familiar with. But we also have two other avenues that we impact kids. One is the National Schools Program. So we go into elementary schools and work with their PE coaches and PE teachers, and they implement our program, our curriculum, through their curriculum. So we kind of embed the curriculum in there. And the third way is through our DRIVE program, and that is our after-school program. So we partner with organizations like the Boys and Girls Clubs, the YMCAs, to impact those kids. We are getting ready to launch in DeKalb County. We're going to be in every elementary school in DeKalb County. And that's really funded by a generous grant by the Georgia Power. And we've got great partners that support our organization.
So you mentioned the Greengrass program, the school mm-hmm. program, the DRIVE program.
Right.
Who is there? There's a full-time team. There's a full-time organization under within the First Tee that is handling those issues, those programs, and going out and helping those kids directly.
Sure. So we've got a full-time a team of six now. But we rely quite a bit, obviously, as you can imagine, on volunteers and our volunteer coaches. The DRIVE program and the National Schools program is handled by our outreach coordinator and Toby Bolton. She's an LPGA teaching pro. And then we also have our director of programs, Janae Jenkins, who handles the Greengrass programs. Our home base is at John A. White Park Golf Course, and we have a PGA professional there, Justin Martin. And we impact there at the First Tee of Atlanta at John A. White Park Golf Course. We impact approximately 250 kids every Saturday. So if you go by there on Saturday, it's pretty impressive. Anywhere from the ages of 8 to 18. So, yeah, we rely on quite a bit of volunteers, always looking for volunteers, always.
Rich, if I wanted to volunteer, how would I contact somebody? What would be the most efficient way to do so?
If you were to get on our website at thefirstteeatlanta.org and go through the volunteer process there, and then somebody would reach out to you. Obviously, the volunteers have to go through a background check if you're working with kids. And we get a lot of groups that want to do that. So we'll get a group of maybe 10 or 12 guys that say, hey, we want to help, but we can't do it every weekend. So we'll put them through the process, and then maybe two or three of them will be scheduled every week so that they're not committed to, you know, a nine-week session. And that's what our programs on Saturdays are, a nine-week session.
Great.
There was a huge, huge push, and I think partly because of the influence of Tiger Woods back around the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. Has participation declined? Have you seen things kind of wane as Tiger has waned, or has First Tee continued to be a great, successful program?
Nationally, last year, I'm going to answer that with this. Last year, nationally, we impacted 5 million kids.
Wow.
So that's your answer right there. I will say this. The First Tee of Atlanta will be celebrating its 20th anniversary next year in 2019. The national program just celebrated its 20th year last fall in 2017.
So Atlanta was one of the first.
It was one. The first one was actually New York City, but yes, we were one of the kind of four first chapters. Sure.
Great. Huge contributions from the PGA Tour as well with the Tour Championship. Allison Fillmore was on a couple weeks ago with us and mentioned that the First Tee.
Allison is actually on our board of directors, and the PGA Tour has been extremely generous to all First Tees across the country. And we're very fortunate to have the Tour Championship here in Atlanta. They are a huge supporter, not only, you know, from a monetary standpoint, but just the support that we get from them with the kids and access that the kids give to our kids. For instance, Standard Bearers, you know, they're always saying, hey, you guys, any kids that do the Standard Bearer, I mean, that's a great opportunity for a kid to kind of walk with one of the top 30 players in the world. So we've always been very appreciative of what the Tour Championship has done in support of the First Tee of Atlanta.
Do the kids have to earn that standard bearer right, or is it a lottery? How does that work?
No, it's usually for our higher level kids, and it just depends on scheduling too, because Thursday and Friday they're in school, so it just depends on how that happens. So no, that's more. I guess it is and it isn't. The way we're set up, a player will start at 8 years old at the player level, then they graduate to the par level, just like golf, par, birdie, eagle, and then ace. And ace, once you get into the ace, it's less programming and more about where you're going to go to college, what kind of decisions you're going to make, what are you going to do for a living, all of those things. So I would say most of the standard bearers are in that birdie to ace level.
And if my child is in the first tee program, what's the normal schedule? What kind of things, activities are happening during the summer? What activities are happening during the school year?
Right. So we have three, in regards to our Greengrass program, our life skills education program, I think that's what you're speaking of. We have three sessions each year, so spring, summer, and fall. And we are in several locations throughout Metro Atlanta, and we're looking to expand. Actually, one of our big partners is Club Corp, and we're working with them in regards to having a location in each of the four quadrants in Metro Atlanta. So that'll really increase the impact that we have with the kids. So a typical session would be depending on the golf course. So, for instance, at John A. White, the sessions are on Saturdays. So we'll have a session at 9:30 in the morning, another one at 11:30, and another one at 1:30. So it's an hour and a half. Of that hour and a half, approximately an hour is spent on, golf skills. But we obviously have the life skills part of our session, and that's the important part.
Right.
You know, the nine core values that you hear about, responsibility, integrity, and all of those. So the life skills actually feeds into the golf skills part, because golf has been is one of those sports that really ties it perfectly. And so honesty, of course, and all of those things. So yeah,
Jason, are you listening?
Are you listening? Honesty,
taking notes.
That's and perseverance too, right?
Absolutely, you know it.
What's people who are listening?
Yeah,
all 14 of them. Who may want to contribute?
15, because I'm on.
Good. You told your wife, too,
yes,
right?
Okay. I hope she's on. I don't think she
Who want to help out the first tee and be contributors?
Yeah.
I know it can be as simple as giving money. Are there fundraising events? Are there different things you do throughout the year that
we've got, yeah, we've got several events actually coming up. We have our First Tee Experience Gala and Auction that's coming up September 15th. That's Saturday prior to the Tour Championship Week. And as a matter of fact, I can announce it here. I guess it's the first announcement.
Oh, nice.
We will be
exclusive.
Oh, that's right. There
exclusive.
You go. We'll be hosting that at the Executive Club on 15th, the 15th hole at East Lake Golf
nice.
Club. So we'll be hosting it there. So it's kind of be a sneak peek for everyone prior
excellent.
To the tournament. And Allison obviously had a lot of help
sure.
with that. She helped us with that quite a bit. So that'll be September 15th. That is in. An invite-only type of an event where we invite our major donors and prospective donors. And if you're interested, you can reach out to me, ralvarez@thefirsttatlanta.org, and I'll be happy to kind of talk you through it. A couple other things that we've got going on. Obviously, the Tour Championship is that following week, and we are a big part of that, and we always like to have a big presence with that. So we'll have kids out there and be making sure that we show everyone that shows up that we're here in Atlanta. And then October 8th, we've got the First Tee of Atlanta Experience Golf Classic. And that will be held at the Atlanta National Golf Club. So
a Club Corp property.
A Club Corp property. They, again, a huge, huge – I think you know this, and most of you guys do. Club Corp is a huge supporter of the First Tee, especially the First Tee of Atlanta. If I can just plug the Player's Book.
You bet.
All right, so that's
I can vouch for that myself. I've
there you
got
go.
One.
There you go. So they, I guess we've got a young professionals group called the Pack, and they somehow reached out to Club Corp and found the right person, a good friend of ours now, Dan Hewitson at Club Corp, and they put together a player's book. And if you donate $100 to the First Tee of Atlanta, you receive the player's book that allows you to visit or be a member for a day at 27 golf courses throughout Metro Atlanta. At first, I was a little hesitant because those kind of things usually say the restrictions on it are like, all right, you can play on Tuesday from 10 to 11. But no, they said, look, we've no restrictions, you know. So it has been a huge success, right, Jason?
It certainly has, and we're my buddies and I all have one, and we're planning on playing a course a week. So
yeah, there you go. So if you're interested in that book, you go to our website again. I'm going to say it again, firsttofatlanta.org, and get yourself a book or two or three or four. And I can tell you we've sold almost 800 books just now.
That's great.
Thus far. So a great opportunity from Club Corp. They're great.
And that the entire $100 goes to
absolutely First Tee. 100. That was one of the things that Club Corp made certain was they didn't want anything back. They said, you know, this is to grow the game. So, and if I can, before I know you don't have sponsors or stuff, but I have to make sure.
We're working on that.
Well, I've got to make sure I hit a lot of a couple of our bigger partners, and that is the PGA Tour Superstore. Obviously, they're here in town. They're owned by Mr. Blank. Mr. Blank is a trustee of the First Tee.
Okay.
So he's always been very generous, and their foundation has as well. And two other ones that the Altria Foundation, and then one other one is the Laureus Foundation, and that is a good for sport foundation. It's a worldwide initiative, and they've come on board a couple of years ago and really impacted and helped fund a lot of our drive programs to reach as many kids as we can, and that's important.
Terrific. Mm-hmm. Wonderful organization, obviously, and as you said, anything that grows the game is good, and we want to continue that momentum. So everyone,
we go certainly to firsttee@atlanta.org.
Hashtag the First Tee ATL. Thank you.
The First Tee was a big part of my life, too. At 15 years old, I qualified at a local club, at Trophy Club, to play in a Champions Tour event out at Pebble Beach.
What is now the Pure Insurance Invitational, but it was the Nature Valley.
Right, exactly. And so I qualified here in Atlanta at 15. We went out there. I got to play that course. My dad got to caddy for me in the practice round on Pebble. And I got paired with Jerry Pate, an Alabama alumni. He's won a major on the seniors. But we missed the cut that week for sure. Yeah. I didn't make very many birdies. I was pretty just trying to take it all in.
Yeah. We actually have First Tee of Atlanta participant that qualified this year, Miles Oliver, and he'll be going out in September to play at. It's called now the Pure Insurance Championship.
It's a great experience.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Nice. It's all coming together here.
It is.
All right. Rich, thanks for being here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mike. We'll move on to our beer segment. As mentioned, we don't have a specific beer guest today, but our second golf guest is drinking beer.
Absolutely.
We just for the people who are listening, we are drinking some Sweetwater Going Coastal
IPA with pineapple.
IPA
and
is very
tasty.
Feedback?
Considering
good?
It's the beer segment, I could use another one.
You got it. Everyone's good with the beer, though? You like it?
Absolutely.
It's excellent. Refreshing.
Good choice. Good
it's
choice.
Good summer beer. So, Robbie, before we get into Southern Simulators, let's circle back to you as an aspiring professional golfer, starting with your First Tee experience in 2015.
Right.
Tell us where you've been, what happened.
Yeah, so it's actually a longer story than we have time for. But I spent 6.5 years traveling around immediately after college as a professional playing in mini tour events. And I played in the 1 day lowest of the low, and I signed up for the 4 day at that point was the NGA Hooters Tour, those type events where there was some serious money coming out in 4 days. You know, I had some decent results, but overall I had kind of regular results. And even still, this is a type of sport that every week, thanks, man, every week is a new week, and you never give up, right? If you're the type that's going to give up, you're not playing the right sport, because midway through the round, you could easily call it at any given day, right? But I traveled around, and I was in Florida and playing in just some smaller winter stuff, and I had acquired a disc bulge and bone spurs in my neck. And so I knew that my playing life was kind of running its course, and I needed to make a shift. And my dad called me and said, a local guy gave us some tickets to the PGA show 3 years ago. And so I was already in Orlando playing. So he came down, we went to the PGA show, and we're walking around in the technology department, and there's about 6 to 8 you know, in-home big golf simulators that I've really never seen. And they were awe-inspiring. I mean, the graphics were great. The functionality was great. And as a real golfer, as a guy who loves to try to shoot under par every day, I understood how accurate and how awesome these things are becoming. So within 30 minutes, we ran into a company called True Golf. And my dad and I were talking to the vice president of the company. And about another 30 minutes after that, I had taken over a few states in the Southeast with kind of reseller capabilities. And so we kind of based it, SouthernSimulators.com is my idea of doing events with the new portable simulators that they have. The majority of these simulators take multiple days to build. They're heavy. They're kind of expensive. And these portable simulators are, you know, plug and play. I mean, you know, PVC pipes are, we got metal rods that just click in, click out, and durable screen. And so we take two of the portable golf simulators around from True Golf, and we do events with them. And events by, we can do a local club member guest where instead of the employees out on a par three having to wait for their players to hit a shot, measure it with a measuring tape, and then relay through a radio back to the head pro so that he can do his shtick on the microphone. Now you can have them at night during the dinner underneath the wedding tent or kind of a big old party tent. And we can do a par three contest at Pebble Beach. We could do it at St. Andrews, the old course, and pick famous holes that people otherwise may not have a chance to play. And so that was kind of the concept, right? So we started taking, I end up buying two of the portable simulators, and we do them, we take them to events, and then I leave them in golf courses if they ever need, you know, some help, or if something's going on with the range, or, you know, that time of the year is really bad weather. And these teaching pros can continue to have their revenue stream by teaching their students on a simulator. And I got to be completely honest, the way technology is today, I mean, this is a technology age. I mean, we got millennials. I could possibly be lumped into that. But we have millennials and everything.
There's a really good
chance. You're the only one in this room.
Yeah,
by the way.
I understand that. But, yeah. I mean,
I don't think I'm there.
Yeah. But overall, like, it's the age of information. It's speed. It's, nobody has time. Like, everyone looks down at their phones full time when you're standing in line. It's all about the speed of information and technology. You watch a PGA Tour event right now. Before they go play and after, if they're on the range, they have some sort of tracking device with them. They are not leaving it up to their local pro's hand eye or their eye watching them behind them on the range. They're leaving it to the actual facts and numbers, and that's just what today's world is. And so I realized that, and so I grabbed those two simulators. We run around the whole East Coast right now. We do an event at the Masters. We do the Friendship Cup at the Ocean Course in Kiawah Island, which is a great event. Every night after these guys go out and play some of the best courses on the East Coast, they come in, have dinner, and we're the entertainment. And the Friendship Cup gives away a driver for each night. There's a winner. So all we really do is just, once we're set up, we just have fun and show these guys that are out there to play golf advocates, crazy golfers, right? They love it. We're showing them that, you know, these machines can help you. They're not the older type where it was just, hey, how does this work? You can't putt on them. Now you can do absolutely everything. And so really all across, we keep moving on in the timeline. I got coming up this year, I got the Myrtle Beach World Am. It's the largest amateur event in the world. Yeah. And they have a trade show after every single day, and we're set up and we're an absolute entertainment feature. We get 3-4 rows deep of people wanting to come through. We get kids and we switch it over to the carnival games. We get it all, you know. And
are you ready to handle all that amount of people? Because that's a huge event.
This will be my second year doing it. Wow. And we just teamed up this year. We're teaming up with Crank Golf.
Oh, right.
And
yeah,
they're going to give away a driver, and we're going to run the simulator contest every single
cool.
night. But yeah, this thing is built to withstand the amount of people and the speed, too. I mean, as soon as you hit the ball, that thing hits the screen and the numbers are showing. The ball's going, right? So. But yeah, so we also just did the Father's Day brunch at the Intercontinental Hotel in Buckhead.
Oh, very cool.
And we just spent Father's Day there, and they gave away a spa treatment, some gifts to their restaurant, and it was a really, really cool event, and I'm looking forward to going back there. But most of these events end up leading us to, which I call the consulting side, or our sales, essentially. And because we're doing these events and showing people that, and it's 2018, technology is everywhere, and it's growing, and it's getting better. And because of that, people want to put one in their house. They want one for the first tee. I sold one to the first tee organization in Virginia Beach, Virginia, 2.5 years ago, and it's for their kids.
Sure.
So that they can get a little bit more information, not try to overload them with technology, but right. The kids know how to turn on a tablet at 3 years old,
sure.
Right? So everyone's kind of more the gaming community now, and this is what these things are. It's real golf indoors with as accurate and realistic looking things as you can, courses and, you know, shots as you can get.
So somebody who wanted to put a simulator, and let me also say, Jason and I are huge simulator advocates and fans because we've played quite a bit of golf simulation, and it's a blast. How much does someone need to spend? How much can someone spend? And what's the top of the line?
Well, as everything goes, you get what you pay for, right? And so if you really want the high-end picture quality and the really accoutrements, you're going to end up spending somewhere around $25 to $35, maybe even upwards of that, $1,000, you know? But you're talking about mounted in the ceiling 4K projectors that, you know, if you want to put a 4K movie in, you got a movie screen at the same time, if you know, so it's multifaceted. But the reality is now you can piece these things together for, you know, a couple of $1,000s. I know a smaller company, All Sports in Raleigh, that I've connected with to make sure that I want to give up my clients the best options. I'm not handcuffed by one in particular company because I told them, you know what, I don't want your leads per se because the events that I'm doing are giving me leads, right? And so I've kind of called around to give options and kind of gobble up as many different simulator styles and companies as I can so that I can't tell a client I cannot help you. Because when I first started this business, I'd go to a house and their room was super small, no ceiling height, and I'd have to leave and just say, look, you can't do it. You know, and I didn't want to do that anymore. And so I searched and I found, you know, companies where, sure, it's more of a launch monitor on the ground next to you.
Right.
And you could take it anywhere and it's more of a just a net. You don't even necessarily have to have projection. So you could just have a regular, like, old, like, baseball netting, you know, that you could hit into. But if you have that machine next to you, it's going to relay the information to your laptop, to your CPU, and show you what's going on that. So there's a way that, I mean, I'm talking from $4,000 all the way to $65,000, depending on what style or what you're looking for.
And that's perfect. You know, speaking of what, you know, adding to what Tim was saying, you know, we played quite a bit. I have a simulator in my condo building, and I have buddies that love it. And they want to add them in their homes or in, you know, Three Seasons rooms outside. And it's always that, what's the size restriction, you know?
Right. You have my cell phone number, right?
I'll have to
just keep handing that out,
yeah,
right? Because
most
that's
definitely
why I'm here. But this industry is so confusing. There's so much information and new technology coming out every year that it's mind-boggling.
And I wouldn't mind them hosting an event or
yeah,
two,
no
actually.
Kidding, right? But that's why I wanted to be more of a consultant because, you know, deciphering through the information, I'm going to ask you, certainly room dimensions are a thing, but now with the launch monitors on the ground, you can have a 6-foot room and put the launch monitor at 3 feet. If you can swing a club, it's functional.
I told my buddy, just dig.
Just dig
deeper.
Yeah. But, you know,
create a little more room.
That's the biggest misconception is that these things are not all $60,000. And as time has gone on, like, technology is improving and the price of these things are going down, right? I'm hoping one day it's going to be like putting a pool table in your basement.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to have it. It's just how it is. The kids are going to want to play on it. And with this year, there's some overhead camera and infrared technology that, I mean, anything that passes underneath that overhead stuff, it's going to read. So you could kick soccer balls, throw baseballs. I mean, there's the possibilities of sporting and gaming and technology are endless. And I'm super happy just to be on like a forefront or a part of it at this point.
When you do an event, like at the Intercontinental Hotel, mm-hmm. what kind of fee is there for that?
You mean what do I charge for that?
Yeah.
Well, local, I usually do around $750. If it's outside of this town, I'm probably going to charge $1 a mile city to city. But for me, it's not even about, like, you know, how much I'm charging. It's about showing these people what this thing can do. And as an entertainment feature, I mean, if we have a golf simulator and, you know, all these other entertainment features, everyone's at the simulator.
Right.
You know, I mean, we've been through this at all of these events I previously mentioned. Like, we are absolutely the forefront of the after party, you know. And so, you know, I'd usually charge on $700, give or take. But, you know, and that's the one thing that I've learned in the last 3 years is that I am currently the only employee of this company. And I can kind of, you know, give or take and choose which location might be more beneficial. And I'll knock a few off. And I've been doing trade agreements. Like, I got, obviously, with the Intercontinental, they gave me some rewards points. And I knocked that total off down a little bit. But yeah, I mean, overall, it's just getting it out there. Our biggest problems right now are that we can't run all day long. We can really only run when the sun is down if we're outside. Then we're worried about weather because we got a bunch of technology, right? And so it's just kind of learning process each year. And each year that I'm learning, these simulators are getting better and better.
Right, right.
Yeah.
More realistic.
Yeah.
Better graphics.
Mm-hmm.
How do people get a hold of you, Robbie?
So you can look me up on Facebook, Robbie Morris. It's RobbieMorrice. You can go to southernsimulators.com. And that's it, man. Hit me up. I'd love to just chat with you if you're confused about which product might be the best for you or if your room can even maintain a functional simulator. Give me a call.
Perfect.
And use promo code Jason.
That's right. And the more of those that come in, Jason, I might just give you my second simulator one day.
Thank you, Robbie.
Yeah, thank you, guys. It's been a blast.
Thanks to Robbie Morris, Southern Simulators. Thanks so much to Rich Alvarez of the First Tee of Atlanta. My birdies and beer partner, Jason Grady, Mike Salmon of Business Radio X. You can find links to this podcast and future podcasts at birdiesandbeer.com, as well as southernsimulators.com and firsttheeatlanta.org.
Yes.
And if you have feedback, we welcome all feedback. And I want to thank everybody who listened previously and did provide feedback, and it was very, very helpful. You can send an email to support@birdiesandbeer.com. And that is all spelled out, birdies and beer. Until next time, hit them straight.
Can I make one comment?
Oh, yes, yeah, absolutely.
I can't believe you had a show called Birdies and Beer. It did not talk about what happened this weekend with the one golfer
right.
who admitted that he was hungover.
Oh, yes.
How did you miss that story?
I missed the story.
Well, because
completely.
It's such a common story that it wasn't a big deal.
The golfer is hungover?
Yes, you're right. It was... Pepperell, the Englishman, who ended up at 5-under leading the clubhouse, talked about how hungover he was.
I had
you
no
buried,
idea.
You buried the lead.
Yeah.
And Mike, thanks for bringing that to attention.
Tim and I actually did bring this up during the Open, thinking, boy, I hope Pepperell's not in there pounding a bunch of pints because he might have to come back out and play a little bit.
For a while, it looked like he may be in a playoff.
That's where the rules, that's that Harry Gray line right? Like, he's been drinking, hadn't he? But is there a 24-hour rule on him?
Interestingly enough, I'd never heard of the guy. And he's in the Golf Digest, this month's Golf Digest, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got it yesterday. And I'm
as a drinker or as a golfer?
Got to be a
both,
golfer.
I think. Both.
Well, now it's both, for
both,
sure.
I guess,
now we got both sides of that guy.
Right, right.
Hey, Mike, thank you for bringing that to our attention.
One last thing, by the way. I brought you a gift.
Yeah, you did. Yes, I must acknowledge that Rich Alvarez did bring gifts.
Allison.
After the first couple episodes where people showed up empty-handed.
Katrina.
So... Thank you, Rich. Appreciate it very much. Robbie, we'll be looking for your gift at some point.
My simulators don't fit in this room.
Actually,
I've got a room they'll fit in.
So, all right. Until next time, hit them straight.